Before we get into today's episode, I want to invite you on a unique spiritual journey this Advent season. It's called Journey to Bethlehem, and it's a free 9-day text message series designed to prepare your heart for Christmas. Starting on December the 17th, each day leading up to Christmas, you'll receive a short reflective message pointing you to the hope, peace, joy, and love found in the coming of Christ. It's completely free and a great way to keep your focus on Jesus this season. Why not sign up today at premierinsight.org/resources? That's premierinsight.org/resources. Now, here's today's podcast.
Provision is a new app made by Christians for Christians. It's designed to help you spend, save and give with greater purpose. You can link as many available UK bank accounts as you like and keep track of everything, simply in one place. Set reminders to pray when your regular giving goes out or to give thanks when God provides. It's not about control. It's about making informed choices rooted in faith. Steward your money wisely with the new Provision app. Download now at provision.money and use code PREMIER to get your first month free. That's code PREMIER at provision.money.
The C.S. Lewis Podcast with Alistair McGrath.
Thank you for listening to the show that brings you the thought and theology of C.S. Lewis with me, Ruth Jackson. Discover more about Lewis by visiting premierunbelievable.com, where you can also find lots of great articles, resources, and podcasts. And you can also register there for the chance to win a free book. If you enjoy listening to the C.S. Lewis podcast, please do consider rating and reviewing it. But now for today's show.
I am absolutely delighted to be joined by Joseph Weigel, a firefighter and host of the Men with Chests podcast. Joseph's also the author of a very exciting upcoming book called Planet Thulcandra, which is an exposition on the relationship between magic and science in that hideous strength. As well as finding out a little bit more about Joseph, we're also going to be hearing a paper that he presented at the 2024 Undiscovered C.S. Lewis Conference, which was held at George Fox University. The title of Joseph's paper there was Dr. Dimble's Neutrals. Joseph, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Joseph, before we unpack some of Lewis's ideas, and I feel like there's so much for us to talk about, would you mind just taking us right back to the beginning of your journey with C.S. Lewis? How did you first encounter him?
Well, the very first would have been Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe when I was a kid. But that was a long, long time ago, and I really didn't like stick with Lewis after that. I might have read Prince Caspian. I don't even remember, but very limited until I was an adult. And then as an adult, really what drew me to him was Abolition of Man. I had been reading some different philosophy stuff and I came across Abolition of Man and that sucked me in. And it was a book that I had to do multiple readings of, a lot of other kind of background searching to discover what he's talking about and that kind of thing. But that was really what got me. And that was probably about like four years ago. So my entry into Lewis is probably quite odd for the, you know, the typical path that people take into Lewis. And then since Abolition of Man, I've gone to all of his works, at least parts of them. And, Chronicles of Narnia now is something I read with my own children. So we'll see if their path is different than mine.
I definitely want to dive into the Abolition of Man because it's not the easiest of Lewis's work to understand. And I know you've done a really great job of trying to elucidate some of those ideas on your own podcast. But before we do that, would you just say if any of Lewis's works have played a particularly significant role in either your life or your faith journey? I'm guessing that The Abolition of Man was fairly significant in that. But are there any other works that have played a significant role, would you say?
Yeah, I mean, the one I would pick out above all the others would be That Hideous Strength. Mm-hmm. And largely it's because I know it better than any of the others. Mm. That and Abolition of Man, which are kind of partners, the biggest thing too within that hideous strength that has kind of affected my own life and my reading of the Bible would be the reality of the supernatural that Lewis puts into that hideous strength. And he's drawing his imagery ultimately from the supernatural worldview that is present in the biblical text. And yet that's something that for modern Christianity of a lot of different denominations, especially the Protestant denomination, which is the one I'm familiar with most, it's almost non-existent. Integrating the idea of there being a genuine supernatural realm into the biblical text and reading the biblical text with that like lens on your eyes, that's a huge difference that has arisen because of my study of that hideous strength.
Now, tell us about the Men with Chests podcast that you host, Joseph.
Yeah, so the Men with Chests podcast, I came up with that name because chapter one of Abolition of Man is Men Without Chests. And when I myself had studied Abolition of Man, I realized that it seemed like it was a hard book to get, and there wasn't a really good resource of explaining what Lewis is doing in Abolition of Man. So I wanted to put this in a podcast form where I just take people through line by line and explain this is what this means. This is what Lewis is talking about here. Both the cultural references that maybe are relevant for his time in England that maybe we just don't have a clue of today, as well as all the historical things that Lewis is drawing from there, whether it's figures like Aristotle or Wordsworth or whoever. So the intent was I'm going to take people through Abolition of Man and explain so that basically you could not have a clue about philosophy or a clue about Lewis, and you could listen to the podcast, and as I go through, you could understand what the book is about. That was the intent. And then from there, I went to other texts, and mostly the podcast has been focused on Abolition and then That Hideous Strength so far.
And for someone who's not come across The Abolition of Man, would you mind giving us a bit of a brief summary of the book? I know it's quite hard to summarize, but as well as you get, obviously people should be listening to your podcast if they want to know more, but just a little sort of snapshot of what The Abolition of Man is.
Yeah, I think the basic thesis of it would be this is Lewis's defense that there is such a thing as objective values. And we could just limit this to objective logical truths. So logic, then also aesthetic, the beautiful, and moral, ethical. So that would be the basic idea. There is such a thing as these objective values, and this is his defense of it. He doesn't even go into the origin or the ontology, to use the philosophical term, of these values in that book. He doesn't say, oh, they're grounded in God's nature. He doesn't even go there. He's just saying these things are objective, and that's his main thesis, and he's defending that idea.
And do you think objective truth, objective values, is a somewhat unattractive concept in our sort of fairly relativistic culture today, Joseph?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, there's a bit of a trick here, because on one hand, we're obsessed with this relativism, but the relativism only applies when it's, you know, politically correct. So, if you hold to a view that is deemed outside the fold, then it's okay to condemn that view. So there's a double standard at play here. And I think this is something that Lewis fully grasps. And actually, to go to that hideous strength real quick, Frost is the great example of this, because he is materialist who is completely committed to this idea that all our emotions, all our thinking is merely the product of our biochemistry. So it's all subjective. It's 100% subjective on Frost's worldview. And yet he dogmatically holds to objective values. So it's an inconsistency. And I think Lewis recognizes this inconsistency. And so he has some fun with describing his Frost character in this way. You know, Mark is like, Mark has no choice. You must accept what Frost is teaching him. You know, he must accept that. Else he could even be killed. You know, that it is a dogmatic view. And Lewis's point, I think, is that this is fundamentally inconsistent, because the view itself that everything is, you know, subjective, a byproduct of our biochemistry, that is itself self-defeating. Mm-hmm. You know, so it falls flat before it ever gets going, or as he puts it, you know, saws off the branch it sits on.
So why do you think the abolition of man rings so true today, even though obviously it was written a long, long time ago? There are still so many relevant things in it, aren't there?
Yeah, well, I think we've just gone further down the path that Lewis was describing, you know, the subjectivism that he's describing at play there in Abolition of Man has really just, I mean, it's just come to a wider flourishing today.
And do you think there are particular ideas in this book that we need to revisit in order to help us navigate contemporary society?
Well, yeah. I mean, the way he puts it is, if you have a civilization that doesn't accept there being objective values, then ultimately that civilization self-destructs. That's how he sees it. This is something that literally destroys the civilization. I think we'd really have to reconsider his point of there being these objective values, the natural law. We have to recognize that this is something that is a first principle, that if we don't accept, then there are serious consequences that will fall from that. And I think one of those that he's pointing out, and we're unfortunately seeing where this is headed, is the destruction of the civilization. And that's, I mean, unfortunately, that is what we are seeing with a lot of Western society currently.
I suppose what you're describing there is the diagnosis of the problem with the direction that modernity is moving. And as you say, we've gone even further than Lewis. But does Lewis propose any solutions or practices that either individuals or societies can adopt or practice to start addressing these issues?
Yeah, well, I think he does, with mostly returning to this idea of there being objective values and learning from the giants that came before us. So he pretty much pinpoints education as being the key to this. That's, you know, are we going to create men without chest or men with chest, you know, which is what I want to be about, creating people that have chest, which means people that basically accept the natural law. We accept objective value judgments, and we can even disagree on where those things are grounded. To point to that hideous strength again, McPhee, he disagrees with Ransom on where objective values come from, but yet he still holds to them nonetheless. So he's a good example in Lewis's story there. So in education, if we're teaching that, you know, it's all relative, then we're going to continue to head down the wrong path. But if we go back to thinkers, whether Christian or not, like Aristotle, or the different biblical texts that hold to the idea that there is objective values, that is the foundation from which then we can build. And I think Lewis has pointed out that that has to be something that's fundamental to education, and not just education in terms of schools, but also parents, churches, you know, that, and because churches, unfortunately, are doing, they're often following the culture and not standing up for truth. So this is not something that's just isolated to, say, you know, public education. I mean, this is something that involves other institutions as well.
What do you think that looks like practically, Joseph?
Well, in the US, I know we have a big rise of classical education, and a lot of those are more in line with the idea of education that Lewis envisioned. So there's one practical thing that's happening here. Another obvious thing would be families that take this seriously and commit to it, which often requires some of their own, maybe self-educating for parents who have not had the kind of education that Lewis had himself. And not that anyone could maybe acquire that same level, but we can get the basics. And then if I, you know, I mentioned churches already, so churches would be another example. I mean, we need churches with a chest. You know, like I said, you have so many churches that are just capitulating to cultural things, and then throwing out basic truths that are presented in the Bible. It's pretty simple. Either you are going to stand up, have a chest, you know, for what is actually the truth, or, you know, you fold. And so these are pretty simple things to diagnose and then to give a prognosis of this is how we can correct. But it's harder to actually implement because it requires courage, you know, and it requires maybe some personal study. So maybe some more reading of Abolition of Man and less watching of TV, you know, it requires practical things like that.
The C.S. Lewis Podcast with Alistair McGrath.
We're going to take a quick break now, but if you are enjoying today's show, please do consider rating it and leaving a review on your podcast platform so that other people can discover it too.
Have you ever found yourself wondering if it's still possible to have civil conversations in today's culture wars? That's exactly why we want to send you a brand new and exclusive booklet called Arguing for the Sake of Heaven, a look at the life and legacy of Charlie Kirk. This compelling resource reflects on Charlie's legacy and the controversies he sparked, but more importantly, it explores how we can recover the art of disagreeing agreeably. In a polarized world, how do we defend free speech, speak the truth in love, and pursue truth without fear? I believe this is a resource that every thoughtful Christian should have. And right now, it's our special thanks to you for your gift to Premier Insight. Your support helps ensure that content like this podcast and so many others continue reaching people who are searching for wisdom, truth, and hope. So I encourage you to give today by visiting premierinsight.org/CS Lewis. That's premierinsight.org/CS Lewis to receive your copy today. Now let's get back to today's episode.
The C.S. Lewis Podcast with Alistair McGrath.
Welcome back to the show. We would love to hear your thoughts and ideas. Do get in touch on social media at Premier Unbelievable. Now let's return to the conversation. Joseph, you're a firefighter. I want to hear if there's any particular ways that you have applied Lewis to your day-to-day work. But before we do that, how did you get into philosophy? That doesn't feel like the average route into philosophy and some of these big ideas that you clearly are so well versed in.
Yeah, I initially got into it mostly just because I got into reading. I'm a person who develops habits and tries to develop good habits. And it was in my mid-20s that I realized that, you know, I should really develop just the habit of reading. Not even reading anything good at that point, or some of it was good, some of it wasn't. But the point was just develop the habit of reading. And then as I developed that habit, the things I read pushed me into reading, you know, other things. So typically, like, you read something, it's like, oh, what's that idea? I mean, what's that talking about? Or what's that book that's referenced? And, you know, okay, I'm going to go check out that. And so anyways, as I went through this process, one of the things I got really interested in was different religions, different philosophies. And so I explored these types of topics. So that led me into reading all sorts of different religious texts and different philosophical texts. And that was really the entry of how I got into that.
So were you a Christian when you were doing all this, or is this all pre?
Yeah. So this is what led me ultimately to Christ. I grew up in a Christian home, but I didn't, you know, really have a Christianity of my own until an adult. And it was this reading habit that led me to then exploring basically what I would just say are like fundamental truth claims, you know, in the big questions of life. So this led me to read different religious texts, whether it was Buddhist or Islam or Christianity, you know, a whole host of things. And ultimately, I came to become a Christian because of the historical claims made by Paul in the New Testament about, you know, either this historical event happened, Jesus was resurrected or it didn't. And he blatantly says, if it didn't, then we're fools. Mm-hmm. I'm like, all right, this is a very real, you know, claim here. This is something that is different than other religions because it's basing it on this historical event that you can then analyze through the historical method. So that was what led me to Christianity.
And you found C.S. Lewis afterwards. That wasn't a step on your journey.
Yeah, you know, I read Mere Christianity as part of this journey, but it wasn't the thing that I needed so much at the time. Mm. So Mere Christianity was actually the first book of Lewis's that I read as an adult. But so this would have been before I really got hooked into Abolition of Man. But it was just kind of read like in passing, not like to deeply study it. And it was helpful, but it wasn't the thing that really drew me to Christianity at the time. I needed the deep analysis of the historical event of the resurrection. And for me, actually, that ended up being N.T. Wright's book, The Resurrection of the Son mm-hmm. of God, which is just this massive study of the historicity of the resurrection. You know, and it's probably just a really boring book unless you really are trying to do what I was trying to do and determine, like, did this thing happen in history or not?
So, Joseph, talk to us about being a firefighter. Is there any wisdom that you have applied from what you've read in Lewis to your day-to-day job, would you say?
Well, in terms of, like, the practical day-to-day, we do have a decent amount of downtime. So the most practical thing I would say in terms of how my Lewis stuff applies to my day-to-day is in that downtime, I try to capitalize on it by maybe reading or trying to do some writing or study or whatever it is, instead of just mindlessly passing the time, you know, with the social media or TV or whatever. So that's probably the most practical application. It's not necessarily, you know, when you're on the job doing stuff, in terms of what you do when you go on a call. Mm-hmm. but that's really the truth.
And do you feel like there's any of Lewis's writings that have been a particular source of comfort or guidance to you in, I'm assuming there must be some really difficult aspects of your job as a firefighter?
Yeah, not really, not because they don't apply, but just because I've done this for 14 years, and before I was a Christian, and before I, you know, gone into Lewis stuff, I didn't really have any issue with mm-hmm. dealing with the, you know, the bad stuff that you deal with, that you see. That I think that's just kind of how I'm wired. I'm okay with seeing things that are terrible and then not having it affect me. So that's probably something that's kind of necessary to the yeah. job if you're going to do it well. And so even prior to being a Christian, that was okay with me.
Has your faith made a difference at all, would you say?
Well, it certainly changes your perspective on, you know, the eternal consequences of people's lives and, you know, their choices. So, yeah, I mean, in terms of how I view things, from my perspective, it does, but it doesn't change them, like how I went about doing the job. You know, that was always the same, whether I was Christian or not.
Joseph, do you think there's a particular encouragement that Lewis would want to give to first responders like you? I'm aware I'm asking you to put words in his mouth, but
I'm thinking of, well, you know, something that comes to mind just off the top of my head is the essay on the atomic bomb. I can't remember what it's called now, but you know which one I'm talking about, and his emphasis on the eternality of the human being. And when you deal with death often, then I think it can, and I think should, make you think about that deeper issue more, like, you know, what is the purpose of the human being? Is there an eternal component to it? So, yeah, I would think that he might say that, you know, you see death all around you. This should lead you to consider, you know, what is the destiny of the human being.
Joseph, obviously That Hideous Strength is your favorite Lewis book, but do you have any other favorite quotations or works of Lewis at all?
Well, there's a lot of great quotations in Abolition of Man. There's a lot of good essays of his that I think are really good to dive into, especially when you're new to Lewis, and you can look at a very short piece and then maybe manage that a little bit better than looking at something that's a lot longer. So depending on what, I mean, there's, because his essays are so varied, depending on what the interest is of the person or the topic they're wanting to explore, you could point them to a whole host of different essays that deal with that.
Joseph, we've already touched on this a little bit, but do you think there's any of Lewis's that you've read that's changed your perspective on a particular issue?
Well, yeah, the supernatural stuff from That Hideous Strength, that's the obvious one for me. Another one, this ties in, of course, with That Hideous Strength and Abolition of Man as well, but his, and actually Michael Ward just had an article in the Life on the Silent Planet essay collection that came out, and he's talking about birth control and Lewis's views on birth control. And that's something that I had not even really thought about until reading Abolition of Man and That Hideous Strength. And my views on birth control have changed because of Lewis.
Joseph, why do you think that C.S. Lewis is still so relevant? Obviously, we've talked about the relevant parts within the Abolition of Men, but it feels like so much of his body of work is still relevant well over, 60 odd years after his death.
Yeah, well, I think a big reason for that is because he speaks to eternal things. So he's looking at first principles, things that are true at all times, at all places, and he puts those into story. He writes about them in Abolition of Man. And so it's something that will forever be with humanity as long as there is humanity. So because he focuses so much on these eternal things, I think that makes him a figure that will continue to be profitable, well past 60 years.
Thank you for listening to the C.S. Lewis podcast with me, Ruth Jackson. Many of the topics that we've touched on today are discussed in greater detail on earlier episodes of the programme. Check out our archive of past shows at premierunbelievable.com, where you can also find lots of great articles, videos and podcasts. Plus, if you register on our website or sign up for our newsletter there, then you will get exclusive access to new content, free resources and more. That's premierunbelievable.com. What did you think of today's show? Are there any topics or works of C.S. Lewis that you would like us to explore next? We would love to hear from you. Send us an email, unbelievable@premier.org.uk. Connect with us on X, formerly known as Twitter, @premierunbelievablefe, or drop us a direct message on Instagram or Facebook @premierunbelievable. We have also recently launched on TikTok, so if that's your thing, or you know anyone else who might be interested, then you can find us there @premier.unbelievable. Your feedback and thoughts are so important to us, so please get in touch. If you're enjoying the C.S. Lewis podcast, please do consider rating and reviewing it on whatever platform you're listening on, as it helps more people to discover the show. Thank you for listening, and see you next time.
Mercy Ships is transforming lives across Africa through medical training and free surgery. Joining me is Dr. Manjeet Dhillon, a volunteer surgeon. Dr. Manjeet, for anyone who doesn't know, what does Mercy Ships actually do?
Mercy Ships is a faith-based charity who deploy hospital ships to some of the poorest parts of the world. And our hospital ship will dock for several months in places where people simply can't access safe surgery. On board, we have everything you would find in a modern hospital. Patients are offered world-class surgery completely free of charge, and at the same time, we train local doctors and nurses so they can keep providing care after we're gone.
You must have met so many people whose lives have been changed. Are there any that stayed with you?
On a recent visit to Madagascar, I met 2-year-old Armella. She was born with a grapefruit-sized tumour behind her ear. Her mum prayed every day that someone would help her. And when our ship arrived, myself and other medical and nursing volunteers from around the world removed the tumour free of charge. Now Armella is healthy, happy and full of life.
And how can listeners help more people like Armella?
Right now, every gift is being matched pound for pound up to 400,000. Your generosity could help a child get the surgery they've been waiting for, or help train a nurse or doctor to change lives for years to come.
Thank you, Dr. Manjeet. If you'd like to help transform more lives like Armella's, visit mercyships.org.uk.
At Lowe's, this Veterans Day and every day, verified military members, veterans, and their spouses get automatic silver status in MyLowe's Rewards with free standard shipping, plus 10% off eligible purchases with no annual limit. It's one way we honor and give back to those who have served and still do. Learn more now at lowes.com/military. 10% discount can't be combined with another offer. Exclusions, terms, and conditions apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.